supported by nothing except Diana's right hand jammed into the rock. Alia could see blood trickling from somewhere between her fingers. The urge to look down, to see how far they'd come, how far there was to fall, overtook her. "Don't do it," her logic centers commanded, but the rest of her nervous system was in full flight-or-fight mode. She looked down. Dizziness washed through her. There was nothing below but roiling sea and hulking black rocks, white caps smashing to foam on the humps of their backs. Alia looked up at Diana's bleeding fingers slipping slowly from their hold. Her own hands felt sweaty. Her body was sliding. She wriggled to keep her grip. "Stay still," barked Diana. Alia froze. Diana released something between a roar and a grunt and shoved her body upward, swinging her left arm overhead. For a moment, Alia thought they were falling. Then Diana's fingers found purchase, her toes dug in, and they were wedged against the rock once more. Alia felt the tension in Diana's back, the contraction of her muscles. They were moving again, higher and higher. Alia didn't risk another glance down. She shut her eyes, and long moments later, Diana was hauling them over the top of the cliff. Alia rolled off her, and for a moment, they just lay there. Diana leapt to her feet, dusting herself off. She offered Alia a hand. "Give me a minute," said Alia, trying to get her heart rate to return to normal. "Why are you tired?" "We almost died." Diana cocked her head to one side. "Do you think so?" "Yes." What was wrong with this girl? Alia took the offered hand, and they stood. The clouds above them were knotted with thunderheads, and the wind tore at their hair. She touched the braids at her scalp. They were uncomfortably stiff with salt and sand. The beginnings of another storm, or maybe the same storm that had caught the Thetis, was moving in. She peered along the coastline but could see no lighthouse or harbor, no signs of civilization at all. This place really was isolated. Alia didn't want to look at the sea, but she did anyway, searching for some sign of the Thetis and its crew. Jasmine, Ray, Luke, Dr. Ellis. "Just call me Kate," she'd said. But they'd called her Dr. Ellis anyway. What had Ray and Jasmine been arguing about when the winds had picked up? They'd been blown off course, their instruments giving readings that made no sense, and everyone seemed to be blaming everyone else. The crew had been sniping at one another since they'd boarded. Alia had kept to herself, feeling a sinking sense of disappointment. Her month aboard the Thetis was supposed to show Jason that she'd be safe on her own, but it was also supposed to give her a chance to make some new friends away from Bennett Academy, and to escape the tension that seemed to follow her everywhere lately. Instead, the trip had been more of the same. Ray and Luke had actually started shoving each other over a playlist, of all things. And now, they were gone. "Maybe we should stay where we are," said Alia. She'd been feeling pretty awful before Diana had shown up, but now that she was out of the cave, her lungs were clearer and she felt a bit less woozy. "They'll send search parties for this ship. Maybe we can find a way to signal from shore." Diana shook her head. "No one is going to find you here. No one ever does." Alia raised a skeptical brow. "Is this some Bermuda Triangle shit?" "Something like that. The island is incredibly hard to reach. It doesn't show up on any maps or charts." Alia waggled her fingers. "Google knows all and sees all." "Google," Diana repeated. "Is Google one of your gods?" "Hey," said Alia. "Just because I spend time online doesn't mean I'm totally brainwashed." Diana looked at her blankly, then gestured for Alia to follow. "Come on, we're too exposed out here." "I'm not sure the woods are a good place to be in a thunderstorm," Alia said. Diana bit her lip, as if she hadn't considered that. "I'm guessing you don't get bad weather around here?" "Never," said Diana. "But it has to be the woods. We can't stay out in the open." A chill spread over Alia's arms that had nothing to do with the storm or her damp clothes. "What do you mean?" "The people on this island came here because they don't want to be found."
"Like you?"
"I didn't have a choice. I was born here. But they really don't like outsiders." Alia shivered. Great. They were one step shy of a dueling banjos scenario. Dueling lyres? Keep it together, Alia. They're not in some weird militia or something, are they? Actually, a lot of them are, military. Better and better. Probably a bunch of paranoid survivalists with Alia's luck. If they didn't like outsiders, they definitely weren't going to like a brown girl from New York. And they don't have phones, radios? No contact with the outside world. What if someone gets sick or hurt? That isn't a problem here, said Diana, then added, or it didn't used to be. So Alia had managed to get shipwrecked on Cult Island. Perfect. Can't we just steal a boat or something? She asked. I considered that, but the docks are full of people. They'll notice someone taking out a craft, especially during a storm, and I think we're going to need more than a boat to get us to Therapni. Where? Southern Greece? The Gulf of Laconia? That made no sense, not if Alia remembered her geography right. The Thetis had only been a few days out from Istanbul. Even if they'd been wildly off course, it made no sense to travel that far. Why not Thessaloniki, or even Athens? That's hundreds of miles from here. We can't sail all that way. Of course not. Alia took a deep breath. Her chest hurt as if someone had punched her. Her lungs still felt waterlogged, and her body was covered in bruises. Beyond that, she felt nauseous and bleary. She needed to see a doctor. She needed to get to a real city. Unless Diana was lying or delusional, both of which were definite possibilities, she was stuck on an island crawling with weirdos, so she needed to be smart. Play along, she told herself. This girl wants to go to southern Greece? No problem. Alia could nod and smile for as long as it took to get somewhere with a phone. She steeled herself and followed Diana into the green hush of the forest. It was like stepping into an alien world. Alia's parents had taken her and Jason on a trip to the Brazilian rainforest when she was little, so they could learn about some of the new species of plants being discovered there, and the medicines developed from those findings. It had been a bit like this, lush, alive, and yet not like this at all. The trees here were like nothing she'd ever seen, some of them wide enough around that the Thetis could have docked in their rings with room to spare. Their roots ran along the forest floor in thick spirals, covered in vines that bloomed with wide-mouthed trumpet flowers. The air smelled sweet and felt almost silky on Alia's skin, and the raindrops on every surface made the moss, leaves, and branches glint like they'd been hung with gems. Great place for a cult. Alia knew she should keep her mouth shut, but she couldn't resist asking, "Why do we need to go to southern Greece?" "Your expedition wasn't attacked because of your parents' work. You are being hunted." "Hunted," Alia said flatly. "For my silky pelt?" "Because you are Haptandra." "Say again?" "A warbringer." "I'm not into gaming." Diana shot her a baffled look over her shoulder. "The Oracle says we must reach the spring at Therapni before the sun sets on the first day of Hecatombion. It's the site of Helen's tomb, where she was laid to rest beside Menelaus. Once you and your bloodline have been cleansed in the spring, you will be a warbringer no longer. You will never need fear for your life again."
"Sure," said Alia.
"Makes perfect sense. Hopefully your enemies believe you're dead, but we should be ready for anything once we're off the island." "I'm going to be ready to find the nearest police station and get the hell away from you, Queen Loon," Alia thought. But all she said was, "Got it." Diana stopped abruptly and put a finger to her lips. Alia nodded understanding, then crept up behind her and peered over her shoulder through the leaves. She wasn't sure what she'd expected to see. Maybe a fort or wannabe military encampment, a bunch of rednecks in camo. Instead, she was looking down at a wide road that led into a city cut from golden stone that seemed to glow in the fading light. A fairy tale city of arches and spires, open porches bursting with cascades of flowers, their domed rooftops and silk awnings held aloft by elegant columns. Something was happening. Women were hurrying back and forth along the road, a sense of urgency in their movements.
Some wore leather trousers and banded tops similar to Diana's, but others were draped in bright silks. They looked less like survivalists and more like a group of performers getting ready to take the stage. Diana met Alia's eyes and made a gesture.
"That's some kind of military thing?" Alia whispered.
"Never mind," said Diana on an annoyed breath. "Just follow me and stay quiet. Try to walk light. For such a little person, you make a lot of noise."
"I am not little," Alia protested. And okay, she wasn't exactly graceful, but it wasn't like she'd run into a tree or something.
They continued through the forest, picking their way between the branches. Diana was sure-footed and never stopped to rest, but Alia felt worse with every step. She had no idea how long they'd been walking, but she'd lost her canvas tennis shoes in the wreck, and despite the mossy covering on the forest floor, her feet were protesting every root, bump, and pebble. At last, Diana came to a halt. This time she got down on her belly and caterpillar crawled beneath a tree covered in fat green leaves. Alia stood there for a moment. Was she really doing this? She heaved a shrug, then lay down on her stomach and followed. They emerged, overlooking a high-walled citadel.
"The walls have cracked," Diana said, her voice full of a kind of miserable awe. "They've stood for nearly 3,000 years.
Now Alia knew the girl was nuts. There was no way this building had been around for that long. It looked brand new, despite the big crack in one of its sand-colored walls. As they watched, Alia saw two more women in leather trousers and tops jog beneath an arch. When they re-emerged, they had another woman with them. She had only one arm, and it was tattooed with what looked like...
"Is that chainmail?"
Diana nodded. "Everilda disguised herself as a knight so that she could fight in the Crusades. The tattoo covers the whole of her torso."
"Wow. It's like she never has to leave Renfair. What's written on her shoulder?"
Diana blinked, her inky black lashes dappled with rain.
"Peace, in Arabic. She had it done when Hafsa came to the island. Both of them work in the training rooms, but with the storm and the earthquakes, they probably need as much help as they can get at the Ephesium."
Diana groaned.
"My mother is going to kill me."
"Why? I should be down there helping, taking a leadership role." Alia almost laughed. Apparently even cult kids had moms with expectations.
"What is this place?"
"The armory." It seemed awfully beautiful for an armory. When the women were gone, Diana led Alia down the embankment and beneath an arch buried in flowers. Alia reached out and touched a cream-colored rose, its petals tipped with red and heavy with rain. She'd never seen a more perfect blossom, and it was nearly as big as her head.
"Gauntlet roses," Diana said. "Jericho lilies, nasturtiums. They're all plants associated with war or victory. My mother really loves a theme."
"Doesn't sound weird at all," murmured Alia. But when they entered the armory, her jaw dropped. The room was a vast hexagon topped by an enormous dome. Each wall featured a different weapon. Swords, axes, daggers, staffs, as well as things with spikes and prongs and creepy little barbs that Alia had no name for. The walls seemed to be organized chronologically, the oldest and most rustic-looking weapons at the top, their sleek, modern counterparts closer to the bottom.
"No guns," she noted.
Diana looked at her like she was daft.
"The gun is the coward's weapon."
Alia said diplomatically. The gun was also the most effective weapon. There was a reason you didn't see cops walking around with double axes. An anti-gun, horticulture-loving, survivalist cult. Maybe they were just hippies who happened to be weapons collectors?
"What is that thing?" Alia asked, pointing to a staff topped by a giant claw.
"A joie. It's used for robbing a mounted opponent of her shield."
"It looks like the world's deadliest mop."
Diana considered it. "Perhaps you can use it to scare the floor clean." They crossed the vast room, past padded floor mats and dummies clearly intended for sparring.
"You guys just leave all of this lying around? Seems dangerous."
No weapons are permitted outside the armory unless they have been sanctioned for exhibitions.
What if someone steals something?
How? These belong to everyone.
Alia silently added socialist to her list of cult adjectives. Jason would not approve.
But she didn't want to think about her brother, or how worried he must be, or the fact that she might not see him again if she didn't find a way off this island.
They walked through another archway and entered a smaller room. The light was dimmer here, filtered through the blue panels of a stained glass dome above. The chamber was full of glass cases fitted with clever mirrors that made their contents seem to float in the blue-tinted light. It was like standing at the center of a sapphire. The cases had no labels or plaques, and each had a different costume in it. A breastplate of pounded bronze and a pair of weathered sandals, the segmented steel and leather of what Alia thought might be samurai armor, heavy furs and beaded saddlebags, a pilot's jumpsuit that looked like it might be from the 20s. Alia wasn't too clear on the history of military fashion, though Nim would know. But when Alia looked closer, she saw the pilot's jacket was riddled with bullet holes. She appeared at the heavy-plated armor in the case beside it. It had a hole in it, as if it had been pierced by a spear. There was something else. The armor, the way the clothes were cut, the crowns and bracelets and boots. Alia stopped dead. They'd seen 20 or 30 people on the road into the city, and not a single man.
"Hold up," said Alia.
Diana was standing in front of a glass case at the center of the room, larger and brighter than the others, lit by white light piercing the oculus at the top of the dome.
"Are there any men on this island?"
Diana shook her head.
"No."
"None?"
"No."
"Holy shit, are you guys some kind of radical feminist cult?"
Diana frowned.
"Not exactly."
"Are you all lesbians?"
"Of course not."
"It's cool if you are. Nim's gay, maybe bi. She's figuring it out."
"Who's Nim?"
"My best friend."
"My only friend," Alia did not add. Jason didn't count, and Theo was more just a friend than actual friend.
"Some like men, some like women, some like both, some like nothing at all."
"But why no guys, then?"
"It's a long story."
"And how were you born here if there are no guys allowed?"
"That's a longer story."
Diana turned back to the case and lifted the latch, but then hesitated. Tentatively, as if she was afraid the metal might burn, she reached inside the case and took out a slender gold crown, a huge ruby cut like a star at its center. Alia had seen a lot of big jewels on a lot of Park Avenue socialites, but nothing like that.
"Who does that belong to?"
"Me, I guess. My mom had it made when I was born, but I've never worn it."
"Is the ruby real?"
Diana nodded and smiled a little. "Red like the dog star. I was named for the huntress Diana, and born under the constellation of her favor, Orion. The stone was cut from the stone of my mother's crown." Diana gestured to the wide tiara that hung suspended in the case, a far larger ruby at its center. "They're heartstones, they act as a kind of compass." She popped the star-shaped ruby from its setting and returned the gold circlet to its base.
"I hope no one will notice."
"A missing ruby the size of a macaroon? Definitely not." Diana let her fingers trail over the other items in the case. A wide golden belt set with red jewels, and hunks of topaz as big as Alia's thumbnails, an elegant unstrung bow, and an embroidered leather quiver full of arrows, a set of what looked like wide iron bracelets, and a long rope coiled like a snake. "We'll need this," Diana said, taking the lasso from the case. As Diana fastened it to her hip, it glinted brightly, as if it had been woven from something other than ordinary rope. Diana touched the cuff of one of the iron bracelets.
"My mother used to bring me here every week when I was little. She'd tell me the story behind each case, all the women who came here. These are the relics of our greatest heroes, pieces of the lives they led before they came to the island, and the battles they fought to preserve peace after. She told me all of their stories, all but hers."
"They must be heirlooms," Alia thought.
Then the bracelet Diana was touching moved. Alia took a step backward and almost crashed into the case behind her. What the hell? It was as if the metal had turned molten. It slid from the case and clasped itself around Diana's wrist. What the hell? Alia repeated as the second bracelet slithered around Diana's other wrist. Diana looked just as shocked as Alia felt. She held her hands before her like a surgeon about to scrub in and stared at the bracelets, wide-mouthed in disbelief. I have a concussion, Alia's mind babbled. I definitely have a concussion. In fact, maybe I'm in a coma. I got knocked out during the explosion, and now I'm in a hospital in Turkey. I just need to wake up because Nim is going to pee her pants when I tell her about the magical island of women. Maybe it's a sign, said Diana. Of what? Alia managed to squeak. That my quest is just, that I'm making the right choice. To help me get off the island? Absolutely, the justest. Alia considered the rope and bracelets. Regardless of what Diana had said about people carrying weapons, if any of this was real, there could be a whole slew of cult ladies running around with battle axes and death mops right now. Maybe we should take something else? Like what? You're the one talking about enemies hunting me. Don't we need, like, a crossbow or a spear? Something pointy? Like that sword? The other artifacts that would be stealing? What about the bracelets? These are my birthright. Can't we borrow something from the training rooms, then? We're not going to the spring to start a fight. We're going there to prevent one. Yeah, but you know what they say. Sometimes the best defense is a good offense. Diana raised a brow. And sometimes the best defense isn't showing up with a giant sword. Says the girl who tops out at 6 feet and can carry me around like a knapsack. No one's going to mess with you. You'd be surprised, I... Another tremor tore through the floor, making the room swim with blue light. Move! Diana said, seizing Alia's arm and yanking her away from the case as it tipped sideways and smashed against the stone floor, sending splinters of glass flying. We have to get you off this island. Alia tried to keep pace with Diana as they fled back through the armory. Her head was pounding, and the nausea had returned worse than before. Chunks of rock dislodged themselves from the vast dome, crashing to the training room mats as Diana and Alia zigzagged toward the entrance. Diana held Alia back as they approached the arch, but their path must have been clear, because she grabbed Alia's hand and they ran for the woods. Only when they were up the embankment and hidden by the trees did they pause. Alia felt like her chest was going to explode. She knew she was out of shape. Nim was always trying to make her do yoga, and Jason was basically in a committed relationship with his treadmill. But this was something else. Her head was spinning, the pain pushing against her skull in urgent pulses. I need to stop, she said, bending double. Her vision was blurry. She felt something trickling over her lips, and when she touched her hand to her face, it came away bloody. What's happening to me? Diana took a cloth from her pack, moistened it with rainwater from the nearest branch, and gently dabbed at Alia's mouth and nose. At her touch, Alia felt the pain recede slightly, her vision clear. I told you, we need to get you away from the island. The island is a metaphor, Alia muttered to herself. When we get off the island, I'll wake up. It isn't a metaphor, said Diana. My home is killing you before you can destroy it. We have to keep moving. Do you want me to carry you? No, Alia said, batting Diana's hand away. I'm fine. Diana shook her head, but she didn't argue. Alia trailed behind her, leaning on the trunks of trees when she had to, listening to the rattle of the breath in her lungs, squelching her way through soft patches of earth the rain had turned to mud. She was aware of birds taking shelter between the great green leaves, the rustle of their wings. She heard the screech of monkeys, though she saw no sign of them. This place was so alive, brimming with life, drunk on it. What's real, and what isn't? Alia wondered. Maybe the island was real and her perceptions were off. Her brain could have been damaged in the wreck. Her body had definitely been flooded by adrenaline. Or maybe she was lying in a hospital somewhere being pushed into an MRI machine and this was all a hallucination. She liked that idea a lot. They'd figure out what was wrong with her misfiring mind, and they'd fix it. Science could solve anything given the time and the resources. That was what her parents had taught her and Jason. The world had a beautiful logic to it, hidden patterns that would reveal themselves if you could just learn to see them. What would they think of giant trees and jewelry that acted like a well-trained pet? They'd say there had to be an explanation. They'd find one. Alia staggered after Diana as the woods sloped down. The trees thinned and gradually gave way to a clearing. She had the jarring sense of slipping from one world into another. They'd just left a forest dense with vegetation, crowded with flowers and brightly colored songbirds. Now she was looking at what could only be described as grasslands, long rolling hills of gently shifting reeds, gray and pale green that resolved to the colors of an overcast sky. Alia tried to catch her breath, acutely aware that she was panting like a tired dog, while Diana didn't seem winded at all. This doesn't make any sense. This kind of ecology is completely wrong for this climate. Diana only smiled. The island is like that. It gives gifts. Alia tried not to roll her eyes. My mother never talks about life before the island, Diana continued, but she loves this place. I think it reminds her of the steppe. Diana stood for a long time, staring out at the grasses. Alia had no desire to start walking again, but she also had the distinct impression that they were supposed to be in a hurry. So, Alia began. Diana shook her head, placing a finger to her lips. If you're going to shush me, listen. All I hear is the wind. Here, Diana said, taking Alia's hand. She squatted down and tugged Alia with her, placing her palm against the damp earth. Do you feel it? Alia frowned, but then, a trembling, different from the earthquakes. It was more like the patter of rain, but that wasn't quite right either. Close your eyes, Diana murmured. Alia gave her a wary glance, then shut her eyes. The world went dark. She could smell the storm in the air, the deep mossy fragrance of the woods behind them, and something else, a warmer smell she couldn't name. She heard the lonely rustle of the wind moving through the grass, and then, so faint she doubted it at first, the softest whinny. It came again, and the sounds began to coalesce with the gentle drumbeat she felt through the earth, bodies shifting together, a snort of breath, hoofbeats. Her eyes flew open. She felt herself smiling. Horses? Diana grinned and nodded. They rose. But where are they? Here, in the field, the phantom herd. Diana unhooked the golden coil of rope from her hip and began to move through the tall grass. It came up to her thighs, almost all the way up to Alia's waist, tickling her bare legs in an itchy way that made her think of cobwebs. My mother and her sisters were great horsewomen, Diana said. They could ride any steed and coax the best from it, land arrows while hanging from a saddle, aim upside down. When Maeve came to the island, Diana's voice wavered. The phantom herd was a gift from the goddess Epona, a thank you to Hera and Athena for granting Maeve immortality. Diana gestured for them to stop, and Alia saw that she had knotted the rope into a loop, forming a lasso. Diana let it swing gently from her hands, building momentum. Alia could hear those sounds growing closer now, the rumble of hooves that seemed to echo a heartbeat, double it, treble it. The tall grass moved against the wind as if trampled by some unseen force. Alia's mind refused it. It can't be. It can't. Diana's eyes were closed. She stood with her face tilted to the wind, listening, the lasso moving in a lazy, looping rhythm. The rope seemed to glow in her hands as she released it. It cut a long, shining path against the gray sky, then dropped around the neck of a huge white horse that hadn't been there a moment before. It was as if the lasso had caused the horse to appear. Alia took a step backward, heart slamming in her chest. Diana gave the lasso slack, turning in place as the horse shook its shimmering white mane in frustration, checking its stride. She tugged gently, and it slowed, rearing back on its hooves and releasing a high, angry whinny.
"It's all right, Kione," she murmured, her voice low and soothing. "It's just me."
The horse danced back, tossing its mane, and Diana gave another gentle tug, the muscles of her arms shifting beneath her bronzed skin. She whistled softly, and the horse's ears flicked. Grudgingly, it settled, hooves landing on the grass with a sulky thump, and blew out a disgruntled breath. It walked forward as Diana reeled in the lasso. When it was close enough, she crooked an arm over the horse's neck and patted its flank as it bumped its great head against her.
"She's Maeve's favorite," Diana said, and Alia could hear the sadness and worry in her voice.
She waved Alia forward with an encouraging smile.
"Go on."
Alia hesitated, then cautiously reached up to stroke the creature's velvety nose. A lot of kids at her school rode, but she'd never seen an animal like this. White as alabaster, marble-hewn, a horse that looked as if it had leapt down from some monument at the center of a plaza. Its lashes were the same snowy color as its mane, but its eyes had no whites. They were the deep purple-black of a pansy.
"The horse. The invisible horse," Alia's mind corrected, then rejected, bowed its head,
and Alia felt some tiny bit of the terror she'd been carrying since the wreck release. Suddenly, she was blinking back tears. She thought of a glass filled to its brim, the tension at its surface that kept it from spilling over. The horse was warm beneath her hand. She could see the long curl of its lashes. It was real in a way nothing else had been since the cold of the waves. If this creature was possible, then all of it might be real. It was too much. Alia shut her eyes and pressed her forehead against the rough silk of the horse's mane.
"What did you call her?"
"Kione. It means snow."
"And she was a gift?"
"Yes. When a rider sits one of the phantom herd and takes hold of its mane, she becomes as invisible as the horse."
"How can we see her now?"
"The lasso. It always shows the truth." Alia took a shuddering breath that was halfway to a sob.
"Can you ask the lasso if I'm going to get home?"
"It doesn't work that way. And Alia, you can't go home. Not yet. People tried to kill you."
"Because of the foundation.
Because of what you are. You're dangerous to a lot of people. We have to get you to Greece, to the spring at Therapne."
Diana whispered in the horse's ear and then plucked several strands of Kione's mane.
Kione made a disapproving nicker, but remained in place, stomping her huge hooves.
"What are you doing?" Alia asked.
"We need these to get off the island." Another tremor struck and the horse reared back, yanking the lasso from Diana's hands. Diana stepped in front of Alia, arms spread wide, her expression unruffled. Kione took some skittering steps, then seemed to calm. Diana waited a few more moments before picking up the rope. She patted the horse's flank.
"It will be better soon," she said softly. "Promise."
Diana slid the lasso over the horse's head, and Alia watched in wonder as Kione vanished. Magic. She was seeing real magic, the kind of magic in movies. No wands or wizards yet, but maybe if she stayed on the island long enough, a dragon would show up.
"It all feels so real," Alia thought as she followed Diana through the grasslands. But that was probably how delusions worked.
At some point she realized that the terrain was starting to look familiar. In the distance she saw the sea. They'd returned to the cliffs. "I'm not going back to the cave," she said stubbornly.
"Not the cave," said Diana. "The cove."
Alia picked her way cautiously to the edge of the cliff and looked down. There was a small sandy beach carved into the coast, like the top of a question mark.
"Okay, but no way am I getting on your back again."
"I can hitch up a sling," said Diana, removing a length of ordinary rope from her pack. "Not happening. I'm not going over that cliff."
"I won't let you get hurt."
"You know what, Diana? We just met, so maybe you haven't picked up on this, but I'm not made like you. I appreciate that you saved my life. A couple of times.
Okay,
a couple of times. But this day has been a lot. I don't do miles of hiking or any kind of rock climbing that doesn't involve a safety harness, an indoor wall, and some jacked-up guy on the gym floor shouting stuff like, "Good hustle." I'm trying my best, but I'm about ready to lose it here. Diana studied her for a long moment, and Alia was pretty sure that the girl could simply throw her over her shoulder if she wanted to, but Diana nodded and gave a small bow. "Forgive me." Apparently, cult kids had really good manners, too. "No problem," Alia said, embarrassed by her outburst. At least this meant no more piggybacks. Diana led her along the cliff to the beginning of a steep, narrow path. Alia swallowed and did her best to feign confidence. "Much better." "My way would be faster," Diana offered. "Slow and steady wins the race." "That is almost always untrue." "Take it up with Aesop." "Aesop never existed. The stories credited to him were the work of two female slaves." "That sounds about typical. I'll ponder it on the way down." Alia started along the path, carefully choosing each step, afraid she'd lose her footing and go right over the side. "It's going to take you an hour if you do it that way," said Diana. "I'll get there when I get there. I'm not part goat." "Could have fooled me." At that moment, another small tremor struck, and Alia pressed her body to the cliffside. "You're sure you want to take the path?" Diana said. "Positive," Alia squeaked. "All right. Wait for me on the sand." "You aren't coming? I'll go my own way." Diana tossed her pack over the side of the cliff to the cove below. Then, as Alia watched in disbelief, she sprinted the length of the cliff top. Alia clapped her hands over her mouth. "She can't mean to." Diana leapt, silhouetted for a moment against the thunderheads, toes pointed, arms outstretched. She looked like she might sprout wings and simply take flight. Stranger things have happened today. Instead, her body arced downward and vanished over the cliffside. "Show off," Alia muttered and continued down the path. As she shuffled along, she alternated between trying to find the next place to put her foot and gazing out to sea to try to locate Diana in the rocking gray waves. The surf was huge, beating at the cove with ceaseless rage. What if Diana had simply been dragged under? What if she'd cracked her gorgeous head open on a rock? The farther Alia went, the worse her own head ached and the sicker she felt. By the time she reached the bottom of the cliffs, her thighs were shaking and her nerves had frayed to nothing from fear of the fall. There was no sign of Diana, and Alia realized she had no idea what to do if she didn't return. Climb back to the top? She wasn't sure she had the strength. Hope one of those hippie weapons collectors found her and was friendlier than Diana had suggested? And what about everything Diana had said about Greece and Alia being dangerous? "Girl is addled," said Alia decisively to no one. "That's what growing up in a cult does to you." "Yeah, and you're the one talking to yourself on a beach." Even so, Alia felt the knot of worry in her chest loosen when she looked out to sea and saw Diana cutting through the ocean, her arms slicing through the water at a determined pace. There was something behind her, a massive shape that appeared and disappeared in the spaces between the waves. When Diana reached the shore, she emerged with water streaming from her dark hair, ropes thrown over her shoulders, feet digging into the sand, every muscle in her body straining as she strode forward. It took Alia a long moment to understand that the ropes were rigging. Diana had hauled the fetus from the bottom of the sea. A bone-deep shiver quaked through Alia. One of the masts was still intact. The other had snapped free close to its base. The prow was completely gone. The explosion had left nothing but a jagged line of wood and fiberglass where the rest of the boat should be. "You are being hunted because of what you are." Diana didn't understand. Alia's family had been targets for so long, first when people accused them of playing God with their research, then because of the rules the Corallis Foundation attached to any grant for aid. There was still speculation that the crash that had killed her parents had been an assassination plot. A thorough investigation had proven that there was nothing more to that terrible night than a slippery road and distracted drivers, But every few years, some newspaper or blog ran a conspiracy piece on the deaths of Nick and Lena Corrales. Alia would get an email from some curious reporter, or she'd walk by a newsstand and see her parents' wedding photo looking back at her, and the wound would open all over again. She remembered sitting in the back seat with Jason, his profile lit by street lamps, her parents in the front, arguing about which bridge to take home. That was the last memory she had of them. Her mother drumming on the steering wheel, her father jabbing at the screen of his phone and insisting that if she'd just taken the Triborough, they'd be home by now. Then the strange feeling of the car moving the wrong way, momentum carrying them across three lanes of traffic as they slid into a skid. She remembered the car hitting the divider, the shriek of tearing metal, and then nothing at all. She'd been 12. Jason had been 16. When she'd woken up in the hospital, she still had the smell of burnt rubber in her nose. It took days for it to dissipate and be replaced by the cloying stink of hospital disinfectant. Jason had been there when she woke, a big slash on his cheek that had been stitched closed, his eyes red from crying. Their godfather, Michael Santos, had come, and his son Theo, who had put his arm around Jason and held Alia's hand. Looking at the remains of the fetus felt the same as waking up in that hospital bed, like grief rushing straight at her. You are being hunted. Was Alia the reason for the wreck? Was she why Jasmine and Ray and the others were lost forever? Diana had set about disentangling the rigging and was now tearing the hull apart as easily as if she were digging into a lobster dinner. What are you doing? Alia asked, eyeing her nervously. Maybe the cult members mixed steroids in with their chewable vitamins. We need a craft to get out past the boundary. What boundary? Diana hesitated, then said, I just meant open sea. The hull is useless, but I think we can salvage part of the deck and the sail and use it as a raft. Alia didn't want to touch the boat. She didn't want anything to do with it. A raft? In that surf? Why don't we wait for the storm to pass? This storm isn't going to pass. It's only going to get worse. Diana peered out at the water. We could try swimming, but if we got separated... It's fine, Alia said, helping Diana brace a piece of the hull against her shoulder and tear it free. At that moment, Diana doubled over in pain. What is it? Alia asked, panicked. Without realizing it, she'd started to think of Diana as invulnerable. Maeve, she said. The others, we have to hurry. Soon it will be too late. Chapter 5. They worked for the better part of an hour. The earthquakes were coming more frequently now, and occasionally bits of the cliff would shake free behind them. Alia had tried to help for a while, but eventually she'd given up and leaned against the makeshift raft, her breath coming in shallow gasps. Diana could see just how ashen she looked beneath her brown skin. She'd seemed better when they were climbing and Diana had been close to her. Your proximity may prolong her life, may even soothe her, but it cannot heal her. She will die, and the island will live. Alia was dying, and though Diana still felt well, she could sense the pain and bewilderment of her sisters through the blood tie that connected all Amazons. What one of them felt, they all felt, and to fight, even to spar, meant to endure the pain of your opponent, even as you dealt the blow. If one of them died... No, Diana would not allow it. Hold on, Maeve, she whispered. They lashed together the raft as best they could, and then Diana raised the sail, tying strands of Kione's mane into the knots of the rigging. With each knot, another section of the raft vanished. It would be invisible from the shores of Themyscira and the southern coast of Greece. Diana hoped to put the raft in as close as possible to Gifeo. From there, it would be a 2-day journey on foot to Therapne. She doubted Alia could make faster time than that in her current state. Perhaps they could acquire one of the machines she'd read about. Do you know how to drive an automobile? Asked Diana as she secured the raft's makeshift rudder. A car? Nope. No reason to learn in New York. Diana frowned. Well, even on foot, we should have plenty of time to reach the spring before the start of Hecatombion. And Hecatombion is what exactly? The first month in the old Greek calendar? It used to mark the start of the year. Got it. Hecatombion. Party at the spring. All the cool kids will be there.
Who are the cool kids?
Ouch. Okay, you and I will be there. Diana had the distinct sense that Alia didn't intend to be at the spring at all, but she could worry about that later. She braided a strand of Kione's mane into her own hair and did the same for Alia, then helped her board and bent to grab the edges of the raft. Diana shoved the raft forward into the water. She leapt atop it, feeling the surf surge beneath her. She let out the sail the barest amount and set her hand to the tiller. As they raced over the sea, Diana glanced back at the little cove, watching it grow smaller with every passing second. It's not too late, she thought. Turn back. Let the island do its work. Instead, she told Alia to ease the sail and watch the wind fill the canvas. The raft shot forward over the crest of another wave, sliding down the other side with a stomach-lurching drop. They passed the rocks that marked the boundary and entered the mists. There was no shift in temperature this time, and Diana wasn't sure she'd know when they'd made the crossing. The waves seemed wilder here, but it was hard to tell. Then Alia tilted her head to the sky and took a deep breath. Diana could see the color in her cheeks returning. Were the earthquakes ceasing on the Mascara? Was Maeve opening her eyes? Or would some sacrifice be demanded to purge the island of Alia's influence? Diana looked back at her home. She'd never been this far out before. Never seen the island from such a great distance. The mists parted briefly, and she could see its shape, the curve of its coastline, the towers of the Ephesium at one end, and the great dome of Banan Maedl at the other, the crests and valleys of its mountains like a green odalisk. The mists closed. The Mascara was gone. If she tried to return now, would the island know her? Would she be able to find it? Would it welcome her back? Back to what? A dark voice inside her asked. What if she could return? What if the Oracle didn't tell Hippolyta how horribly she'd betrayed her people? If she remained on the island, she would only ever be Hippolyta's coddled daughter. She would never be allowed to find her way. Hippolyta could claim that Diana was an Amazon, but before everything else, Diana was her daughter, too precious, too breakable to risk. And that was how the other Amazons would always see her. Not as a true sister, but as their queen's child. She would forever be an outsider, a weakness to exploit. But if she made things right, if she got Alia to the spring, it wouldn't just be a mission, it would be a quest, a hero's journey, like those set before champions in times of old. The line of warbringers would be broken. Alia would live, war would be prevented, and Diana would have proven herself. By then, Hippolyta and Tech would know all about Diana's transgression. She would have to face a trial before the Amazon Council, but Diana had to believe she would be forgiven. To stop the cycle of warbringers? To prevent not just one war, but countless future wars? That was a deed worthy of an Amazon. There would be punishment, but surely not exile. You will still have to look Maeve in the eye and tell her that you were the cause of her suffering. That would be the worst punishment, the hardest to endure, and there was no question Diana deserved it. Of course, she might fail. She might save this one girl and plunge the earth into an age of war, a war that might reach beyond the bounds of the mortal world to her home. Diana remembered the vision of her mother's body lying lifeless on the field, the accusation in Tech's dying eyes, the ground turned to ash, the smell of blood and burnt flesh in the air. That hideous creature with the head of a jackal. Her mistake might cost them everything. No. There had to be a reason she'd been the one to see the fetus sink, the one to pull Alia from the sea. She'd been given a chance to help bring peace to the world and to end the cycle of war that lived in Alia's blood. She would not fail. And she would not let fear choose her path. The mist was cold, and the surf bucked beneath them like a living thing. Diana reached into her pocket and took hold of the heartstone. She could feel its faceted edges hard against her palm. Alia, she called over the wind. Take my hand. Ollie lurched across the length of the raft to the stern. She grasped Diana's hand, wet from rain and sea spray, the heartstone tight between their palms. Ready? Diana asked, keeping her other hand on the tiller.
Ready, Alia said, with a firm nod.
Diana felt a grin break over her face.
Destiny is waiting.
She focused on her memory of the map of Greece, the Gulf of Laconia, the divot in its southern shore.
Guide us, she willed.
Nothing happened. Diana had the sudden, mortifying thought that maybe she'd misunderstood how the Heartstone worked. What if her will wasn't strong enough to direct it? They'd be lost on the sea, stuck on this raft, and she would never see Themyscira again. Then the raft began to spin, slowly at first, gaining momentum. The waters rose, turning in a spiral, forming a wall around them, a column of gray sea and writhing foam, churning faster and faster, higher and higher until the sky was barely a pinprick of light far above. With a loud crack, the sail ripped free and vanished up the flume. The raft shook, breaking apart beneath them.
Don't let go, shouted Diana, holding tight to Alia. Are you kidding?
Alia screamed back. They were soaked through, huddled over the rudder on their knees, their palms pressed together so tightly. Diana could feel the edges of the jewel cutting into her flesh. Tech was right. The gods are angry. They'd never wanted her on the island. It was the worst kind of hubris to think they'd sent Alia to her as a chance at greatness. They'd sent Alia as a lure, and now she and the Warbringer would die together, consumed by the great mouth of the sea. The roar of the churning water filled her ears, rattling her skull. The wind and salt lashing at her with such force that she could not keep her eyes open. She huddled against Alia, felt her pulse, or was it Diana's own, in the press of their palms. All at once the world went silent. The roar did not quiet, but simply vanished. Diana opened her eyes as the column fell in a great tumble of water, drenching them and sending the raft rocking as the sea sloshed beneath them. Mist clung to the broken stump of the mast as the raft swayed, then stopped, the waters eerily still. They were shrouded in darkness. Had night fallen in the mortal world? Had they lost or gained time when they used the Heartstone? They were still moving, carried by a strong tide, but the surf had calmed to the barest ripple. Diana and Alia stared at each other. Alia's hair hung in a wet mass of braids, her eyes wide and round as newly minted coins. Diana suspected she looked just as stunned.
Did it work? Alia said.
Slowly, they unclasped their hands. The Heartstone was covered in their blood. Diana wiped it clean on her wet trousers and slipped it into her pocket. She looked around. The raft was nearly half the size it had been when they left the island. The mast was in pieces, bits of rope and rigging hanging from it limply. Through the mists, Diana saw the first twinkle of lights. They were brighter than the lanterns of Themyscira, steadier than torchlight, hard pinpricks that glinted like captured stars, white, pale blue, gold, silvery green.
It worked, Diana said, only half believing it herself. It actually worked.
She'd done it. She'd left Themyscira. She'd crossed over into the world of man. The lights multiplied around them on both sides, more of them than she ever could have imagined. Diana could hear water slapping at the sides of the raft and something else, deep and resonant, ship's horns, a sound she'd only ever heard from a great distance on the island. But the lights were too close, too bright, too plentiful. Had she brought them that near to a city? And why did the Ionian Sea feel flat as a mill pond? The mists cleared, and Diana glimpsed another light burning high in the sky, different from the others, a vibrant yellow torch held aloft by the statue of an Amazon, her stern face framed by a crown like a sunburst, her gown hanging in gray-green folds of weathered copper. Behind her, Diana could see the lights of a vast bridge.
This isn't right, Diana said, standing slowly. This isn't Greece.
Alia threw her head back and laughed, a sound of pure exuberance and relief and pride.
No way, Alia whispered.
She spread her arms wide, as if she could take the whole city into them, as if all of these lights had been lit to greet only her. "Welcome to the greatest city in the world, Diana. This is New York." She whooped and turned her face to the sky. "This is home." Chapter 6. What have I done? The air felt strange on Diana's skin, gritty in her lungs. She could taste it in her mouth, dank and ashy against her tongue. The lights on shore seemed less like stars now than the bright reflection of predators' eyes, wolves waiting in the dark. She whirled on Alia. "What did you do?" Alia held up her hands. "You were the one steering." "The Heartstone was steering. I thought of the spring. I focused on the coast of..." Her words trailed off as she looked at Alia's relieved, happy face. The Heartstone was supposed to heed the desires of the woman who commanded it. Apparently, Alia's will had been greater. "You were thinking of home." She could not keep the accusation from her voice. Alia shrugged. "Sorry? I don't think you are." A horn bellowed, closer this time, as a barge passed, trailed by a rolling wake that struck the remnants of their raft. They stumbled, managed to right themselves, but the raft was taking on water fast. "Think," Diana scolded herself. The Heartstone could only be used to leave them Mascara or return to it. She could use it to take them back to the island, then try again, but could Diana risk bringing the Warbringer back there? Would Alia or the island survive that? To the east, she saw the beginnings of dawn tipping the sky gray. Her eyes scanned the horizon. New York. The island of Manhattan. Diana knew the maps well enough from her studies, knew she was thousands of miles from Therapany and the spring, and any kind of hope. She released a frustrated moan. "How did this happen?" Alia smiled slightly. "I've been saying that all day." Had it only been a day? That morning, Diana's sole worry had been losing a race. Now she had abandoned the only home and the only life she knew, and possibly doomed the world to a bloody age of war. Apparently, she had a gift for disaster. "Make a new plan," she told herself. "Soldiers adapt." "We need to get to shore," she said decisively. It wasn't much, but it was a start. Of course, they had no mast, no sail, and no way to steer. "We're going to have to swim." Alia shuddered. "First rule of New York living, do not swim in the Hudson. Do you know how polluted this water is?" Diana eyed the river. It was an opaque blue verging on slate. It looked nothing like the clear waters of home. Still, "Water is water," she said, with more confidence than she felt. The wind and sea had torn the strand of Kayoni's mane from Alia's braids, and Diana's own braid had come loose as well. They would be visible once they left the raft, but there was nothing to be done about it. She wrapped her arm around Alia. "I can swim," Alia protested. "It's dark out. I'm not taking any chances," said Diana. And now that they were back in the mortal world, she wasn't entirely sure that Alia wouldn't just paddle away on her own. Diana plunged them both into the river, and her whole body recoiled. The cold she had expected, but the water felt wrong. It was dense and clammy, like a moist palm clenching around her. "Hey," Alia complained, wriggling in her grasp. "Whoa, whoa, head east toward Manhattan, otherwise we'll end up in Jersey." Diana kicked hard, eager to get them out of this soup as fast as possible. Suddenly, Alia stiffened in her arms. "What is it?" Diana asked. "Are the poisons of the water affecting you?" "I remember." "Remember what?" "This. You saving me from the wreck." "That seems unlikely. You were unconscious." Alia's back was to her, but Diana felt her small shrug. "I remember the water turning warm." She paused. "I remember thinking everything was going to be okay." Diana could hear the relief in her voice, the conviction that things had turned out all right. "She thinks she's safe now," Diana realized. "She thinks this is over." "There," Alia said, craning her neck. Straight ahead, that's Battery Park. In the gray light, Diana could just make out the hulking shape rising from the water, and as they drew closer, she squinted. Are those cannons?